You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it. People who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God does there. I am your host, Joe Epley, and today we get the privilege to talk to our guest, Pastor Andrew Jurgensen. I'm excited to hear from him. He actually has a cool background in the corporate world before coming into pastoring, and I love the overlap of those lessons and what he learned along the way. And so we're excited to dive into his story. He's coming from Aiken, Minnesota, and the first thing I want to say is, Pastor Andrew, how are you today, man?
Oh, doing great. Thank you for having me today. I appreciate it a lot.
Absolutely. I mean, these kind of stories are so much fun. And I know that every interview I've done, I've just been surprised by the way God kind of weaves our stories together and turns us all into pastors and leaders. And it's super fun. So first, I want to dive into your background, and you can kind of hit on, both kind of pre-pastoral ministry and then into pastoral ministry. But tell us kind of the story of you. How do you relate to the rural church? What's your ministry journey been like? Talk to us, man.
Perfect. Pastoring was not on my radar. It was not even close to what I wanted to do. I truly do blame my wife. Prayer works 100%. No, I was very happy. So I finished up 20 years with Walmart, and most of that was in leadership positions. To be quite honest with you, I loved the career. I loved where it was going. Like I said, I had a plan. And ultimately, what happened was the last couple of years of being with Walmart, just it was starting to get moved from my heart, and things weren't going the way that I thought they were supposed to be going. Anyway, with that said, my wife really felt pulled to get into church, and she landed at Restoration Church, was less than a mile. And we talked about Pastor Andrew Sheldon before, which,
yes, he's a mutual acquaintance of ours and a great man, yes. A great pastor.
He's just an awesome guy. And he did a really great work in my life, I guess, if you want to put it that way. Well, my wife started to attend a church, and then at some point in time, she just started to volunteer and do different things. And that's kind of where things take off for me. So the Walmart piece, I started doing some promotions. I started moving stores as Andrew Sheldon and I became friends, and which was great. But there was a point where I moved to a store that was really hurting bad. And I was asked to go there to kind of help turn things around, I guess, if you will. And it changed my life completely. Anyway, what was happening during that time, though, is Victoria's getting involved, and my life was sideways, and I started landing at the church. And well, here's where it gets a little bit goofy, just to put it in perspective. My wife is working there, so it makes it okay. But
yeah,
what was
no
happening,
worries.
I started showing up on Wednesday nights, and it's a youth group. And Sheldon and I had started to become friends a little bit, and I was just hanging out there, and he would like, I was sitting in the youth group, and he would hand me the leadership pages, and I'm like, dude, can I just sit here and just hang out? And Sheldon's like, yep, you can do that. So I was, in all intents and purposes, just hanging out in the youth group, I guess, and just healing, I guess, if you will. And over time, what happened is Sheldon started asking questions if I wanted to get involved. And at that point in time, I just started hanging out, and I was doing some Bible study stuff. And the cool thing was, is I didn't know anything about it. And he just gave me that time and that space just to learn what that looked like. And here's the quick story of it. So John Jordahl, I've told this story 100 times before. He was part of the youth group piece of it. And he goes, hey, do you want to do a Bible study with the youth? Because our leader's not there. And I said, yep, sure. I can do that. And he goes, hey, whatever you do, just find it together in the Bible. And I'm like, awesome. So we had 20-some kids follow me into a room. I thought John was going to come with me because, there again, I've never done a Bible study before.
Sure.
And I watched him drive away.
Wow.
He drove away. And I'm like, dude, what's going on? It was the coolest thing ever. After the panic attack set in, I went with the kids, you know. And there again, the advice of just finding the Bible, they ask questions. And that was really the first step in ministry that I had. Was just watching this guy drive away, open the Bible, and start talking to kids and just working through some stuff. And that turned into, that's been my ministry walk. It's just like, people are like, here you go. Go ahead and take off. Anyway, after some time, it was kind of fun. Sheldon comes up and he goes, hey, what do you think about pastoring? Is that something you feel called to do? And I said, absolutely not. That is not even close to what I want to do. And so I started doing some research about pastoring. What does that look like? And asking some questions. And some of the scary things are, and I hate to throw it out there, but it changed my life, is there's an 80% chance that I will not make it to retirement as a pastor or in this position.
Yeah, no, so, it's real.
Right. So why in the world would I want to go from where I was to what I was going to be doing? Anyway, so through a course of just circumstances in life and decisions and God calling me and all that kind of stuff, I started going through Minnesota School of Ministry,
true,
and then also Global University. And so at that point in time, I was working about 50 hours a week. I would come to work about an hour early, do homework. At lunch, I would do about an hour's worth of homework, because I wanted to spend some time with family, and I was doing the work stuff. And then Pastor Sheldon asked if I would become the associate pastor, so I became a part-time associate pastor while still doing all that kind of stuff. So it was 300 miles an hour, just kind of doing that. So that's the journey ahead. As doors were closing at Walmart, and I felt it coming in, and there was a position where I decided that I needed to step back. So I took like a $20,000 hit the first time I stepped back, took like another $15,000 hit when I stepped back again, moved back into a store that I grew up in, I guess if you will, managed in, promoted out of again, and then came back to. And it was a humbling experience to walk back into a store where I had hired, fired, held accountable, gave evaluations for a majority of the people that were still there. But it was a great experience as far as, God just taught me a lot of things during that season of what my leadership was like and how it transitioned into an hourly position compared to a salary. So how'd I get to Rural Church? God just started closing doors, made it pretty evident that I was supposed to change. So
talk to me about Aiken, right? Because obviously you say, hey, I jumped into rural ministry, but how did you get specifically involved with Aiken? What's the church like and the town like? Give us that brief, you know, overview of that.
Absolutely. So how did I get involved with Aiken? So as I was going through and getting done with schooling, we were still probably 5 months away from my final interview. And my wife, I'm going to kind of chunk some of this out of here, but my wife like started to feel like we're going to be moving. And my wife was not a mover. We lived in Glenwood for 18 years. That's where we're going to retire. And that was it. We're done. She started packing up the house. And I'm like, are you nuts?
Wild.
Right. No, for real. Like, I'm like, you're packing up the house. I'm like, I don't even know if I'm going to get credentialed yet. I don't even know any of those things. She's like, babe, we're going to be moving. So anyway, we get to the interview, went through the interview process. At the end of it, they're like, hey, why don't you go ahead and start looking for churches? Nice. They asked what my calling was, and I said, hey, my calling is lead. I don't know what that looks like, but that's what it is. Anyway, what happened then is we thought we were going to land at a church that was in the border of Minnesota and Iowa, very close to my wife's family, and her parents were aging out. So I'm like, hey, this is going to be a good fit. I'm just going to be honest, as we're looking at this church, it had staff. It had a nice building. It had all the things. And I'm like, that is going to be fantastic.
Trims and trapping, yep.
Right. We're going to move us. We're going to move from 7 hours away from her family to an hour. So she could literally drive her there in the morning, come back, and hang out. Well, anyway, as I was going through that process, I got a call from Pastor Mark Boone, who was the interim pastor here in Aiken. And he asked me if I've ever thought about coming to Aiken. I'm like, I don't even know what Aiken is. Right. So as we're walking through that, it's always nice to get a call. It's honest. It's true.
Yeah.
It's nice. Anyway, so I'm writing it down, went back and talked to my wife. I said, hey, church called and just asked if it was something we're interested in. I said, I don't know. And just kind of left it at that. And a couple of days later, what happened was my wife, this is kind of the backstory. My wife had gotten a bad ski accident, wrecked her knee something fierce, could barely walk, was woken up in the middle of the night right after that phone call with a burden for Aiken on her heart to pray on her knees. And she was on her knees for a couple of hours praying. And I'm like, okay. And I didn't know about this. And sure. Night or two later, I woke up. I'm like, man, aching is pounding in my heart. What's going on? And so I get up in the middle of the night on my knees praying. My heart's breaking for aching. And a couple days go by, and I'm like, hey, Victoria, just so you know, I said, I feel kind of bad.
Yeah.
But something's going on. And she's like, hey, just so you know, same thing. So I'm like, all right. So we called Boone, Pastor Boone, and just said, hey, we just want to meet with you guys. And things escalated quickly along that line. So here's the cool part, though. So we're talking to the leadership team, and I had shared that story with Pastor Mark Boone. He didn't say anything to me other than during that meeting, he goes, can you share the story I just shared with you? And I said, absolutely. Yeah. And he goes, what you didn't know is the first message I preached here was to bring a pastor that's called, but not only called, but woken up in the middle of the night to pray on their knees about aching because their heart is
wow.
breaking.
Gosh.
And it was like, right. And I'm like, oh, man. And I went back when I was talking to my wife. I said, Victoria, I'm sorry. I know that we're supposed to move closer to your family. I know that we're supposed to do that, but God is moving us. And she's like, absolutely, this is what we need to do.
Wow.
So that was, if I felt like there was a divine call, that was the call that we were supposed to go into Aiken. And it was just, this church had gone through a lot, and it was ready to do something different and just start moving and growing from there. So,
yeah. How big is the town of Aiken, and how's the church doing?
It is the church. Aiken is just as shy under 2,000, or just over like 2,100. What was the church now, or what was it then? I'm sorry.
Well, what was it then versus now? Just to give people again, we'll dive into the lessons of the journey, but just to let them know what kind of congregation we're dealing with here. Yeah.
Sure. Yep. Yep. So, a congregation I came into, there was about 40 people here. They had been, a lot of them had been here forever. They were the staples of the town, staple of the church. They kept it alive. And so kind of that old root piece of it. So this church though was also a campus church to a bigger church in Brainerd, and they had gone, so everything was good. Here's just the breakdown real quick. Pastor Dan Turner, retired, went to the office and said, hey, is there a church that would like to pick them up? Kind of small. Brainerd said, yes, we'd like to do this as a campus. There was a 5-year commitment. Brainerd came in and they did a fantastic job. They put in a parking lot. They put a new roof on. They geared the basement for kids. They put a new sound system in. The parsonage was not in great shape. They actually went through, gutted it, put it back together.
Oh, wow.
Updated it. I mean, just they poured in to this church. And after 5 years, they decided it was time to break off. And that's when Pastor Boone came in to that. So we went through, this church had gone through a lot of transitions in the prior 6 or 7 years to me coming here, if that makes sense. And the reason that's important is really this. They, as a church, were ready to do something different. Pastor Boone did a perfect job as far as anything that was hard and harsh. As an interim pastor, he's supposed to flatten those things out.
What a guy.
I know.
God bless interim pastors.
I know. So when I came in, though, I really had a bunch of eager people that wanted to do something different. And that's what it was. Like, you know, you hear about you can't move the piano, you can't move the chairs, you can't do all that stuff. Well, those are things I did. And they didn't say anything. We painted walls. We did all kinds of different things. So the old roots were really pulled out. The field had just been freshly plowed, and it was ready to be the harvest, I guess, if you will. So that's what it looked like when I came here. And then after that, it was about what God laid in my heart. Here's something interesting. Is very simply this. I had vision of my heart from God way before I got here. And I learned that the vision of my heart was not for the church that I was in before. It was to prepare me for here and now. So all the ministry pieces that I thought that were supposed to be implemented other places were implemented here. And God just blessed and gave favor and gave blessing and it just continued to move. So,
man, that's exciting. Well, let's start to dive into, you know, moving just beyond the story. Let's dive into some of the lessons that you carry with you. My first question, I guess, would be, what are some of the important leadership lessons from Walmart? Because obviously 20 years in management, you know, you're not a slouch in a sense. You're not a stranger to leadership positions and things like that. And especially something that interests me that you said, and obviously the lessons might extend beyond this, but you talked about the power of like holding people accountable. In Walmart, you know, obviously you have a structure where you say like, I'm doing evaluations and hiring and firing and all these things. And I've noticed that in churches, sometimes we have a lot of good ideas, but when it comes to holding people accountable, it can be one of the hardest parts of the job. But beyond just that lesson, I mean, talk about that one, but what else did you pull from your season in Walmart?
Sure. So Walmart really did a fantastic job of teaching and training. They sent me off for 2 months with soft skills. And that was not operational. It was not how to run a store. It was basically how to talk to people, how to evaluate, all those different things. What I hated about it, but I appreciate now, is you would literally sit across from people and go through mock interviews, go through hiring, go through firing, go through all those things. And then they would critique you and teach you how to do different things, which worked out great. And then quarterly, they would send you to AMQD, which was a quarterly development, and you'd come together and you would talk about operations and things like that. So they did a great job that way. So here's the problem that I guess I have, and my management style wasn't exactly what Walmart would consider what they were looking for. Sure. I was considered a collaborative manager.
Okay.
And what that meant in a sense was this. A lot of times when you're managing, you grab a group of people and say, this is where we're going. Let's go now and follow me. Like what's push me. I'm more of a, hey, this is where we need to go. Let's get there together. How are we going to do that? I don't care how we get there. I just want to get there together. And this is the goal that we need to meet. So that's the collaborative part. So here's the hard part in managing, large stores. Cause we're talking, 250 to 350 people, trying to move them in that direction is it takes time to be collaborative, but it worked out well. So how do you hold people accountable underneath that kind of management style? The easiest way for me to say this is I treat people like a piggy bank.
Okay.
So that means that you have to deposit a lot. We called it CBWA, coaching by walking around. And what that meant is those are soft contacts. How you doing? How's your family? How's your vacation? You know, how are things going here at the store? That kind of stuff. Those are all soft contacts. That's all putting stuff in the piggy bank. And then when you have a hard contact, you take a withdraw. And the point is to withdraw less than you put in. Does that make sense?
Mm. Yeah.
So now does that work most of the time? Yep. And sometimes it's just hard contacts. You just have hard contact or hard contact. So what I've learned, though, is if you avoid the hard contacts or the hard conversations, people don't grow, they don't develop, and they don't learn the direction that they're supposed to be going. So conversations aren't bad. They're just setting somebody up in the direction that they need to be going. And when they learn that your position is more of a coach than it is somebody that's going to hold you accountable and fire you, it changes that relationship. Mm-hmm. So relationship. Does that kind of make sense?
No, that makes a lot of sense. Absolutely.
So you back to just kind of wrapping around to Walmart. What did Walmart teach me? They taught me a lot of the skills that I needed, and how I applied them were maybe a little bit different. But that's really what works in the church world. There again, you have people that are coming to church to meet Jesus, and having appropriate conversations and building people up and building relationships is a huge difference. Without that relationship piece, people won't follow you, if that makes sense. They won't follow you following Jesus,
right?
Which is kind of cool. So,
Oh, that's huge. And I can imagine, because obviously we talk a lot about the lessons we learn, but they mean so much more when you see them tested and tried over and over. And the fact that you had 20 years and stores of, you know, several hundred employees, it just reinforces the fact that like, hey, you can invest relationally. You sometimes have to make these tough withdrawals, but ultimately, you know, you were the one who got to see a dozen times over that if you didn't have hard conversations, people wouldn't grow, you know, and that's, That's huge, because I think for me in leadership, I think for a lot of pastors, it's not the word gun shy kind of comes to mind, where it's like, man, I have to walk into this situation and it's going to be tough. And should I press that button? Should I, try and engage? And I think that it can be obviously a huge win when we engage well. Well, hey, let's talk about setting culture in church. So my first question is, how important is setting culture in church? And obviously, culture is a big term. We talk about culture, meaning like kind of the rules of engagement, or who we're going to be, or what our identity is. And then on the tail end of answering that, tell us a little bit about this grandma's house culture that you mentioned you're trying to create in your church. Because I think I love both of those. Like, how important is it? But also, what the heck are you doing over here? You know? So, sure.
Well, let's just start with grandma's house. I think that's the easiest.
Perfect. So
I don't know what your grandma's house was or what your relationship was, but I'm going to tell you about mine. My grandma, when I walked in the front door, she was just extremely happy to see me. She didn't care what I was doing the night before. She didn't care what was going on in the past. She just wanted to give me a big old hug and a big old kiss. And there was the refrigerator as I was open. There was pop in there. There was hot dogs. There was, as I got older, there was coffee. There was always an invitation to visit and stay. And it was never about her. It was always about, hey, how you doing? And there was times that we got to sit in silence, which was perfect. And there was times that we got to talk about stuff and play cards, which was awesome. So when people walk in the front doors of the church, they need to feel the presence of the Holy Spirit. But they also need to feel that what they did yesterday doesn't matter. It's right here, right now. Thanks for making a decision to come here today. So the church... there's a refrigerator as you walk in. There's coffee the whole nine yards. It is literally stocked with Mountain Dew, with root beer, Diet Coke, pop, all that kind of stuff. And we don't charge for it. It is open. You take whatever you want to take. And there's sometimes where you'd have some kids go out there like walking with three cans out to their car. And there's two ways to look at it. Either A, how dare they feel that they can take
sure,
three
absolutely.
Cans. Sure, absolutely. Or what a small investment for them to come to church and hang out with you and hear about Jesus. So culture, that is when people catch that, lives change. When people come into a church and they don't feel like they're being judged, they don't feel like they're being condemned, they can come here and listen to the word of God and let the Holy Spirit do what he's supposed to do. Oh, life gets a lot easier. And you just let God do what he's going to do. And we're supposed to love God and love people. And I believe that that has gone a long ways in the growth of this church, because you earn the right to speak truth into somebody's life. And anytime that we can earn that, that's when great relationships come out of it. And that's where that piggy bank gets filled up. And when you have to make a withdrawal because somebody's doing something they shouldn't be doing, they know your heart. They start to see that you love Jesus and you love them, and the conversation changes to something more of a coach than to condemn. Kind of thing. So
I love that.
Yeah.
So talk about maybe the importance of leading a church kind of with a team, right? Because you mentioned that when you at Walmart, when you're handling conflict, developing people, you mentioned this kind of team approach. And again, I think in church, some pastors might be listening and go, yeah, I understand team, I get it, but it's nice to reinforce. But there's some people who are still kind of like, man, I wear the weight of the pastor, and that means that I have to go deal with this or I have to do that. And so talk about the importance of kind of this team approach, whether it's developing people or handling conflict or whatever.
So two things. So one is calling to maturity, and that's not my coined phrase. That's someone else's, and I'll give credit if I remember who it was, but I don't. But calling to maturity is one thing, but there's another piece to this back to the culture. So culture trumps everything. It trumps policies, it trumps procedures, it changes all that. For example, just a couple of months ago, we had a guy here for a second Sunday in a row, and great guy, awesome, like long hair, beard, brings his family in, like salt of the earth kind of guy, right?
I love it.
And yeah. And so church is done, and all of a sudden I see him pull the garbage liner out, tie it up, ask where the garbage, liner is at, put a new one in there, and brought it out to the trash. So think about that for a second. On his second Sunday, he felt comfortable enough to make a decision to pull the trash out, put a new liner in there, and go. And he didn't say, that's not my job, that's not my responsibility. It was sure. Like, hey, this feels okay. This feels right. So I'm just trying to explain is that's where the culture trumps all of that. When somebody feels comfortable enough to open up their fridge and take things out because they feel comfortable with that, you're not walking into a stranger's place. Does that make sense? And you're going to have to help me with the second part of that question. I should have wrote it down.
Oh, no, that's okay. So, yeah, the idea is, what is the importance of leading a church with a team approach, right? You've got everything from developing people, handling conflict, but what is, you know, why is that so important?
When there is a culture like that, people want to get involved. Mm. They see something that's different, just like the story I just shared. He felt comfortable to do it. He felt comfortable to get involved. Actually, Lake Geneva Christian Center is just 2.5 hours from us. That gentleman that had been with us just for a couple of weeks actually wanted to put his kids in that. And he asked, he goes, is there any way that I can go as a leader on that part of it? So it was like jump, jump, jump. So leading a team is when there is a culture of collaboration, a culture of getting things done together. People feel comfortable. They see gaps, they see needs, and they fill those gaps and they fill those needs. Hmm. And then they see the overall picture of where we're going as a church. So when you say love God and love people, that's a pretty broad spectrum of things.
Sure. Yeah.
But when people come up and say, how can I help love God better and show people how to love God better? How can I fit in? And when you're calling for small groups, people show up. When you put out there, so I have not in the last 2.5 years ever asked anybody to run a small group for me. Hmm. I've waited for people to come to me. Hmm. And every year so far, we've had a few small groups. I would say probably 6 or 7 of them that have come up. So the other game, we're not a huge church. And they would be like, hey, pastor, I have this laid in my heart. Can I run this small group? Because they saw a need, they felt like they could meet that need. And then my job, quite simply, isn't to sit down and drill them with 400 questions. Because at this point in time, I probably already had coffee with them, brought them out for breakfast. We stayed after church and we hung out for a while. Sometimes I've gone to their house. Sometimes I've done that. And here's a phrase that's important. Every conversation is an interview. So as they come up and talk to me, I already know who they are. I know their character. And now it's simply, show me what you would like to teach back and how can I support you? Mm. That's that team building part of it. So right now, the only paid staff in here is myself. And then I recently brought my wife on as the executive pastor because she has taken all of the operational stuff off my plate. And sure. Now I'm working on preaching and connecting to the community. So nice. Everything else is volunteer base.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah, no, that's huge. I love how you connected the two because again, we talk about the importance of leading with a team, but really what you kind of flipped on and said was to say, hey, if you create the conditions under which a team feels like they can be a part, you'll never lack for help or ideas or a way forward or volunteers. And so I think that's huge. And I think that speaks a lot to when you choose, you know, which I know you already highlighted the inconvenience of it in a sense where you're like, hey, leading collaborative is slower, you know, it takes time, but being intentional, I think is huge. No, that's a really great thought. I always love these podcasts because, I learn a ton, you know, as we get to interview. Next question. So, and this is going to sound commonsensish, right? It's going to sound kind of like something we should already know. But how important is the principle of going to people instead of letting them come to you as it relates to small town ministry?
In short, it means everything.
Sure.
It means everything. I'll break it down. So right now, when I came to Aiken, during the interview process, I felt like my job was to show up. So all I was supposed to do was show up. So when people called and asked, I went. when people wanted whatever that looked like, I went there. And then people started to call about different committees and different things. So when I first went to this church, there was a string of suicides.
Oof.
And yep, it was rough. It was actually really, really rough. And I wasn't even at this church yet. I had just gotten to the point where they were going to vote on, I wasn't even voted in yet, vote on if I should come here. And I heard about Pastor Mark Boone that was going to do a prayer walk around the school. And at the time, I lived about 2.5 hours from here. And so I left Walmart early. I drove here, landed at in the parking lot. And I'm like, hey, can I just pray with you guys and be part of that? So that's what it was, is hang out. So I showed up. And then when it came to voting in and that kind of stuff, it was good. It was really good just to show up and hear the hearts of people. So as of right now, I sit on a suicide awareness prevention committee. I sit on a health and human services advisory committee. I sit on the board of the Chamber of Commerce. I sit on the welcoming committee, which means that any new businesses that come in, I get to go to the businesses with a team of people and get to welcome the community. And then I'm also on the town's event committee, which means that anything that goes, anything that happens in town as far as parades, events, that kind of stuff, I sit on those. Now, why it's important is this, is as I build those relationships and people have things that come up in their life, they've already built a relationship with me. Mm-hmm. And I've had more cold contacts that way where I'll be walking down the sidewalk and somebody's like, hey, Pastor Andrew, this is going on. Can you pray with me? Hey,
what pastor are they going to go to except the one they know? You know, that's the one.
Exactly. Exactly. So what a small investment in your community to be available and to, lack of better words, to rub shoulders with a bunch of people that are through all those different things. Now, here's the other part of it that I think is cool. 2020, there was no ministerial after 2020 here in town.
Oh, yeah, no ministerial association, sure.
Yep. So I made a couple of phone calls and I said, hey, I'm not going to leave this thing. But nobody's met in a couple of years now. Do you guys want to meet up and talk about what it looks like to be a ministerial? And it was interesting, the conversations I had back and forth through text were like, we don't need a coffee clutch. We don't need just time to hang out and that kind of stuff. If we're going to do this, let's do something. And so we met the first time, we're like, as a ministerial, what do we want to do? And out of a Baptist church, three Lutheran churches and whatever else, they're like, what is the point of this? And they're like, how do we pastor a community together? And I'm like, okay. So we started doing some some messages together. We building messages, inviting the community in. We have a community potluck coming up here in 2 weeks. We have different those kinds of things that are just starting to come up. And then as I've been getting involved with the community with some more things, I've been inviting the ministerial in, and they start showing up with bounce houses. They start showing up with musical bands. They start, and it just be now the ministerial is like we're pastoring a community and starting to break down those walls of Lutheran, Baptist assemblies, all of those different things, and we are trying to pastor the community together, and it just lightens some loads because it's been fantastic. So that same premise of just let's do something together, let's collaborate it, and what do we want to do? It works outside the building too. Mm. Yeah.
I love that. Well, hey, to finish out. And this is just, it's going to highlight maybe a moment of vulnerability that you had that you shared with me. And I love maybe ending on this note because I think that oftentimes on these leadership podcasts, we walk away hearing about what we can do and here's the principle we should apply and here's, you know, and all those things are obviously really great. And obviously if we do them, you know, we can expect God to meet us there. But you talked about how your church has been growing, but you had this Sunday, right, where you got up on stage and like, man, attendance had just plummeted that Sunday. And so talk us through maybe where you were at on that growth track, you know, how many people had you had? What did this dip look like? And just really like, what message did that reinforce for you that, you know, kind of kept you going with the Lord?
Yeah, so just started a young adult group, and it was like our second meeting. I was just being completely honest with them because they had seen the church was growing. And I don't remember what the question was, but it lent right into this. And I said, here's the deal. 40 people is a lot easier than 50. 50 people is a lot easier than 60. 60 is a lot easier than 70, so on and so forth. I said, the bigger we get, it gets more difficult. There's more people to visit, more, you know, just more things going on. And quite honestly, some more expectations that, come out of growth. And the conversation kind of ended, and that was fine. So I went and looked up the numbers just this morning. The previous Sunday to that, we had 111 people in service.
Yeah, which is huge when your average was 40. You know, like, that's great. Yep.
And I think we had been here, I don't know, it was just a couple of months, and walked in that Sunday to 63.
Oof.
That was, it's a 44% downswing. That's a lot. Like, that is just uncanny.
Yeah, that'll get you.
Right. And I just was praying, and I'm like, God, what's going on? What did I do? And I just remember this just strong sense of, you do not bring the growth. I bring the growth. And at that moment in time, when I shared that story, it was 100% true about how much easier it was with less people. And that really came out of fear. Public speaking doesn't come easy to most people, including myself. So the bigger that we got, the more scared I was. Mm. And when God said that it's Him that's doing those things and not myself, that took a lot of pressure off me. It's God, you laid a vision on my heart, and I'm going to continue to move forward on that vision, and you do your part. And when I pray with you, God, you just tell me where you want me to go, and I will go that direction. Mm. Can I read you something?
I would love to.
It'd be 2 seconds here. So when we talked last, I got off the phone with you, and I talked, and I wrote this down. I wrote down what is your God-given mission? That's what I wrote down. And then I wrote on there, don't stop, keep going. And I don't know why. I took this out yesterday as I was reviewing. I wrote on there, Paul's thorn in the flesh. And I'm like, God, why did I write that down there? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So yesterday, as I was just praying about this and reviewing about this, I went and looked it up. And this is now, here it goes. What is your God-given mission? Don't stop, keep going. And then 2 Corinthians 12:7-9. This is the thorn in the flesh. It says, or because of these surpassingly great revelations, therefore, in order to keep you from becoming conceited, I was given a thorn in the flesh, a messenger from Satan to torment me. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me.
Mm.
Very simply to say this, we've had a lot of wins in the church, and we've had a lot of losses, a lot of hard conversations, a lot of this is the direction that we're going to go. Let's go this way. And there's always going to be conflict. Mm-hmm. And so many times people can unknowingly try to move you off of the mission that God has given you.
Mm.
And we comply because it's easier. Yeah. But when God gives you a mission, just keep going, keep moving forward, keep praying. And God's grace is sufficient for you. And that's when you can just gladly boast all the more gladly in your weaknesses, because it's God's power, not yours.
Hmm. Man, well, Pastor Andrew, this has been just a delightful and insightful conversation. I want to say thank you again for being on the podcast today.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate being here. Thanks for just, I just pray that maybe this story inspires someone.
Absolutely.
Just they can keep leaning on what God has for them.
Absolutely. Well, hey, from all of us at Rural Advancement, we just want to say thank you again for tuning in. It really is our sincere hope that you will be challenged and encouraged and inspired. Because again, we want to make resources that are not just spoken to the rural church, but are spoken by people who really get it. As always, you can find our podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or our website, ruraladvancement.com. But true to the rural form, probably the most likely way that this podcast will spread is just by one pastor talking to another pastor or leader and saying, hey, there's a set of conversations you got to check out. So once again, I've been your host, Joe Epley. He has been Pastor Andrew Jurgensen, and we will see you next week.